Shalom and welcome. I am Richard Address, Director of Jewish Sacred Aging, and we welcome you to another in our series of Jewish Sacred Aging podcasts. These podcasts hope to feature conversations that relate to issues that touch on the impact of longevity within our community. We welcome your comments and suggestions to www.jewishsacredaging.com or to rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com. And we are pleased to welcome to this podcast Sally Kaplan, the Program Director for What Matters, Caring Conversations About End of Life, and Rabbi Michal Springer, the Director of the Center for Pastoral Education at the Jewish Theological Seminary in New York City. Rabbi Springer and Sally, welcome to Jewish Sacred Aging's podcast. I really thank you for joining us and the power of technology to put us all together and somewhere. So thank you. Thank you. Welcome.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
We want to talk about this project that you're involved with, What Matters, Caring Conversations About End of Life. It's a joint project with a variety of organizations, institutions in New York. So, Sally, let me ask you, as the director, as the program director for What Matters, first of all, what is What Matters?
So What Matters is a program of the Jewish community of New York. It is a program that is funded uniquely by our Jewish community funeral home, Plaza Jewish Community Chapel. And it was developed by a consortium of three organizations. That would be JCC Manhattan, the Jewish Community Center, the Center for Pastoral Education at JTS, and the New Jewish Home in New York City. And our mission is to bring advanced care planning to the Jewish community of New York through a program that was developed and that we have adapted by Gundersen Health System in La Crosse, Wisconsin, which is called Respecting Choices. And it is a program that follows a very defined and evidence-based model that brings people into conversation about what their end-of-life healthcare wishes are in the situations in which they are unable to make decisions for themselves.
So when you say evidence-based, what does that mean? What does that mean?
So Respecting Choices is a program that was developed in a healthcare system. And over time, as it was developed, they did research and kept data on how successful their model has been. And they found that 96% of the individuals in La Crosse, Wisconsin, who died, had advanced care health documents, and that 99% of the people who died had their wishes known and honored. So we consider it, and I think that actually the world considers it now, the gold standard of advanced care planning, that the techniques and processes that they have developed over time have been proven to work. And I think what was exciting for us is that we took a model that was developed in the healthcare system and brought it to a community-based model, and for our purposes, a Jewish faith-based community model. And so it's been exciting for us to take what they have developed and to shape it so that it works for our Jewish community. And I believe that Respecting Choices is excited as well to see how their program can extend beyond their traditional hospital-based model.
So, Michal, the desire to make this a Jewish-based project. I know this is part of a a significantly growing trend around the United States of America and a desire to involve faith communities in advanced planning curricula programs. What's making this respecting choices model, what's making it, quote, Jewish?
The respecting choices model is values neutral, and it's intentionally designed to reach the broadest audience possible. When we wanted to bring it to New York, we understood that locating the facilitated conversations inside of Jewish community was a way to reach people, a way to let people know that it existed and help them to feel that it was something appropriate for them. So one of the challenges across the country is that people are aware that there is such a thing as a healthcare proxy, but either people don't fill them out, or if they do fill them out, they do it in a pretty perfunctory way, meaning that there aren't deep conversations connected to it. Respecting choices adds a depth to the conversation. And in the respecting choices model, there is a question about values, personal, religious, spiritual, cultural values that are important for decision making. So what we said is, we love that. We love that question. And in order for it really to tap into the energy in the Jewish world, we need to expand on that question and add Jewish as part of the list of where your values come from, and train people to have an awareness of a lot of different ways in which Jews might connect with their Jewishness as a resource for making advanced care plans. So we added a whole other training component. We drew on what Respecting Choices knows how to do. They have really innovative training model, which includes an online component and in-person training. And we said, we're going to add Jewish awareness to this, Jewish education to this, so that we can really have respect for Jews across the spectrum of Jewish experience, secular, all kinds of religious, ranging from quite liberal to quite observant, and sticking with a non-judgmental frame, which has been really liberating. Our coalition of pilot sites is across the spectrum of Jewish identities, and the training has been embraced by people from different backgrounds saying, oh, it really opens up the conversation and makes people feel included.
So this project, What Matters, is now, you're piloting this in facilities around the New York area within the Jewish community. How long is this curriculum, if I can use that term? How many, is it 1 day? Is it 7 weeks? How long is this module?
So the training itself involves selecting either volunteers or in some cases staff who want to be facilitators of the conversations. In other words, yes.
So Sally, you're going to train facilitators, and the facilitators are then going to be turned out to run the program. Am I correct on that?
That's right.
Okay.
So we selected, in our first pilot year, we selected 5 sites, and we are just embarking on our second year, so we will have 4 more sites. I'll tell you what they are. We have, of the 9 sites that we will have, there are 6 are synagogues, and 1 is our JCC, our Jewish Community Center in Manhattan. One is our nursing home, as I described earlier, and the third is an agency in New York that deals with the aging population, the large agency. So we're in not only synagogues, but, you know, community centers, agencies, social service agencies, and ultimately, as we expand, we hope to reach into the non-affiliated world and to touch the Jewish population wherever they might be, both physically and along the spectrum of Jewish observance. So within each of these sites, a team is formed. Facilitators either volunteer or are asked to take on the responsibilities of a facilitator, who will then be, as you pointed out, holding these conversations with individuals within their communities. And the facilitators are each exposed to these online modules, which Michal just explained. They undergo a full day of certification training that they must pass. And then they are required to do, you know, a number of practice interviews, and then go out into their communities to draw people in through a variety of means who are interested and want to engage in these conversations. And they hold a very sort of scripted and time-tested conversation that focuses on things that individuals should be thinking about and talking about with their loved ones, and in particular with their designated health care agent, in terms of, again, what they would want and want the family to consider if they're in an end-of-life decision-making situation and cannot make the decisions for themselves.
So you train facilitators. I'll make up a Temple Whoopi, one of my favorite synagogues. Let's say three people from Temple Whoopi are trained by you, by the organization. Then they come to the synagogue, and they're going to be made available to individuals for individual conversations or a sort of like an educational program. And will those then facilitators who have been trained, Michal, will they then, in the process of walking through the documentation and et cetera, for the state of New York or wherever this is, they're going to be trained on how to explain what the Jewish approaches to end-of-life issues are, the various texts, responsa, points of view across the denominational line? So this is more of an individual one-on-one consultation, or are there also groups?
Actually, let me start to explain organizationally, and then Michal can talk about your question specifically about the Jewish aspect. I just wanted to clarify that in Congregation Whoopi, the team would be identified from among the congregants, or perhaps some of the staff, and they would be trained to do these conversations within their own community. And then they would have a variety, and I can talk about this more, of ways of engaging the community. They might have a panel. They might have a newsletter article. There might be a sermon from the Bema. And people have opportunities to sign up with a certified facilitator who is known or someone who is part of their community to have this one-on-one conversation, which can either, when we say one-on-one, it is with one facilitator, and it can either be with one congregant. The congregant can choose to bring in their agent, who they've designated to make the decisions for them, with them to have, you know, two people in the room. And people are even invited back for a subsequent conversation if they'd like to have the facilitator present while they speak to their loved ones. So that's the process. And then
Paul. Yeah, let me talk about the Jewish piece. We don't expect that the facilitators, who are largely lay people, are going to have a module of online training and a day of facilitator training and are going to be experts in Jewish views on end of life. That would be unrealistic. What we do in the module is, in addition to exposing people to role plays of people from different backgrounds and how they might engage in this conversation, we created something called Sage Voices, which is a fantastic resource of brief videos done by a number of religious leaders in the Jewish community here in New York, talking about issues like nutrition and hydration, palliative care versus curative care, organ donation, issues that are on people's minds that they need to be thinking through as they communicate their wishes to the people in their lives. That resource, Sage Voices, was so successful that the facilitators, when they saw the videos, said, we would like to make these videos available to the people who are having the conversations and making these decisions. So that's now a resource that's on the JTS website. If you just plug in Sage Voices, it's also available through the JCC website. So the idea is that the facilitators will be able to recognize threads in the conversations and make referrals, encourage people either to speak to their own rabbis if they are affiliated enough to have a rabbi, to speak to resources in the community. We're blessed here in New York to have organizations like the Shira Ruske Center that specializes in end of life, and they have people who are available there. And we have print resources that are also available. We have a whole resource sheet that we developed and online resources that we point people to. So the facilitators don't have to feel that they have to give guidance as experts in Judaism. Their training, essentially, is in listening and listening well, creating the space for people to go into their own thoughts and beliefs and wrestle with these questions, because they're hard. Even if we think we have clarity, when you open up the conversation and we all are facing that, we don't know what it will look like, what exactly we will have to be choosing in the moment about. It could be a variety of things. So getting some clarity about what our core values are is essential. And the listening facilitators are skilled in provides the context for really having the conversation, opening up the dialogue with the people who are going to be making those decisions when the person, him or herself, is not in a position to make those decisions. That's what the training focuses on. And then the Jewish piece is a resource that we want the facilitators to have a sense of what those conversations might look like with the rabbis, with the experts, but not to try to have them themselves and overstep their expertise.
So I have to ask you a question, you know, colleague to colleague. Like, so you're in the pilot last year, according to Sally, six synagogues in the metro, New York area. What's been the reaction of the rabbis in those congregations? How have they reacted to this program?
Many of the rabbis in the congregations made the videos with us. And when I said to them, we'd like you to make a 3 to 5 minute video on withdrawing or withholding life support, they said, what? 3 to 5 minutes? What are you talking about? But when they had to do it, or when they graciously agreed that they would do it, and then they took on the task, they discovered that if they tried to distill it, when they tried to distill it to a concise message that also had the complexity, that there was something to say. And now these views are being talked about, and people are coming to them and interested, and not just hoping to avoid the conversation, but being willing to enter into it. So it's opened up a whole level of engagement where people really feel that the Jewish community is providing them with reassurance in the face of one of the great challenges we all know is ahead for each of us as we age, or sometimes not as we age, but the sudden things that can happen in our lives at any age.
I want to say that all of the rabbis who have been presented with this opportunity to engage in what matters have openly accepted the opportunity, welcomed. I can say that it spans the denominations, the size, the demographics. It has been from our admittedly limited, but I think it is representative module that the synagogues are very sort of open to this. And the rabbi's response is often, how many times am I called into a critical situation? And this is in the hospital when a decision has to be made and the families are torn apart because they haven't had this conversation. So I believe that the clergy in general feel like this is going to, you know, help the families, help their relationship, and bring the clergy in as part of the conversation that has been ongoing, and it will be less about responding to crisis and dire situations. So we found a very open and acceptance among the clergy thus far.
Oh, and any of us, and you know, I do this on a regular basis, as all of our colleagues do, who have worked with families in these issues, know that the pre-need, advanced ideas, conversations, developing a care plan, et cetera, just in the end saves untold aggravation, emotional stress, et cetera. So let me, before we start running out of time, I want to just ask both of you one, what brought you, Sally and Michal, what motivated you to get involved in this particular project?
I do a lot of training of seminary students and clergy out in the world, and in-depth training around end of life and decision making and the kind of pastoral listening that enables people to meet these challenges. What I love about this project is that it's an opportunity to equip communities through lay people to transform the culture of institutions so that the power isn't just located in the hands of a few who are well-trained, but that an appropriate level of training is spread around. And I think it's a really healthy model for moving the culture as a whole. So where my emphasis is usually on training leadership, I'm always curious to see how much can the community as a whole take on. And this has been a great testimony to the capacity of lay leaders to be real partners in doing this work.
Right. Sally?
And myself, you know, I have also done chaplaincy and worked in palliative care and also spent many years working for the Jewish community in end-of-life issues. I think this program came, the opportunity to engage in this program came at an opportune time. I think that the general public is much more aware of it. The Atul Gawande book, articles in the paper, I think just the general experience people have in their lives around what we call the medicalization of mortality is much more front and center. And the fact that people are interested and reach to their Judaism and values at the time when they have to make these decisions also attracted me. And I want to say that lastly, I think we have all been extremely motivated and inspired by the fact that this project coming around advanced care planning has found sort of a common denominator around parts of the community that might be disparate or you might not see obvious connections between. Having a community center, a funeral home, a seminary, and synagogues and organizations all come together around something that's so deeply felt, for me, is very inspirational, and it's an incredible opportunity to engage in this sacred work.
You know, I think, Sally, yeah, you put your finger on something also that these ideas, the fears, the emotions, one's own fear, one's own mortality, the family issues, they're human. It's not denominational, they're human. And so many baby boomers who have seen what has happened with their own parents, I think lodged in our psyche is we have to make sure that I don't do that with my children. And so I think this is one of the motivating factors in why these programs on a variety of different levels are now popping up all over the country. Let me ask you one other question here, because you're sitting in New York, you have the wealth of resources, institutions, abilities to finance things that not every Jewish community has. And there may be someone who is listening to this over the course of whenever, the next couple of months, a colleague, a communal service worker, et cetera, who's not living in a major metropolitan area, who's living in a smaller Jewish community with much more limited resources, and said, boy, you know, if only I was living in a New York or an LA or a Philly or Chicago, where that, you know, they're just institutions all over the place. How translatable is this? What matters to the small city to the small city Jewish community, to those places that may not have huge resources? How portable is it?
Well, I believe that it is very portable. First of all, Respecting Choices is a national program that makes their training available without the large organizational structure that we're developing. And so individuals can be trained through the Respecting Choices model. In addition, what we have developed in terms of our Jewish approach and materials and videos will be available to other Jewish communities, as well as our offering our advice and consultation. And in many communities, I think this advanced care planning work is being taken on in medical systems. So perhaps Jewish communities can, partner with them in order to develop their capacity. Michal, was there anything you wanted to add about?
Yeah. Part of what's been exciting is that the consultant from Respecting Choices who works with us, she goes all over the country, and she's been talking to other communities about what we've done, and they've said, oh, we'd like to draw on that. And the way that we designed it, by creating an online module as part of the training, we designed it so that people all over the country could, in fact, take what we've done and use it. They don't have to invent everything that we've invented, because we've done it and we've made it replicable. The whole idea of the model is that it should be easily replicable. And we would love for people to take a look, use the resources, adapt our resource sheet to whatever's available in your own community, and do the training. Even if you just have a tiny Jewish community, one of the mottos here is think big, start small, that you start with your own small community and you get a group of facilitators going, and we're looking for saturation in small communities. That's what makes for success. So I don't think there are any barriers here at all.
And so let's suppose somebody listens to this and wants to get that information. Is there a contact point for what matters, that somebody could either email you or call you and just continue this conversations on that level? How would they do that? Is there an email that they could, you want to share?
Well, there is a web page that I can give you now that has contact information and email addresses and even some of our materials and other aspects about our program.
And that is, Sally?
So it's www.whatmattersny.org.
Whatmattersny.org. So, great. Sally, Michal, thank you very, very much. This has been very educational, exciting, and it's must be a wonderful feeling to really pioneer and develop something from the grassroots and watch it grow and know that it has such a profound impact on human beings and their lives on a very, very basic level. So Kol HaKavod, congratulations, and we wish you continued good luck in all of this. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yes, thank you.
My pleasure, believe me. To all of you, thank you again for listening to Jewish Sacred Aging podcast series. Again, all of these podcasts are archived on our website, jewishsacredaging.com. And again, we welcome your comments and suggestions to rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com. We invite you to visit the website as well as the site's Facebook page, and we look forward to greeting you at our next session. And thank you for your support and attention. And a reminder that these podcasts are recorded through the facilities of Lubetkin Media here in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. To all of you, thank you, and Lehitraot.